This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday. And this week we are discussing upcoming releases, including The Monuments Men, Vampire Academy, and The Lego Movie. We're going to have a spoiler-free review of I, Frankenstein, you're welcome, as well as some catching you up on a couple others we've seen since our last full episode. The From the Outside In topic this week, movie topics or subjects that we just can't stand anymore. So we'll get to that a little bit later. We got a lot of listener email at the end of the show, so be ready for that. You guys asked us questions, so we're going to answer them as best we can. Latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson, and with me today are my fellow hosts, Justin McCumber.
Jesus, that sounded like it took forever.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
And, oh, my God.
Brian Williams.
Is it Friday yet?
Brian
Williams. Every Friday.
Damn it, Brian Williams.
What? Yeah. Hi. I'm alive and well from this ice apocalypse that's been devastating Georgia.
Hot Atlanta.
Ooh, yep. How bad is it in Atlanta-ish area?
According to the news, it's pretty bad, but I don't live there, so yay me.
Isn't everywhere in Georgia considered Atlanta?
In about the next 10 years, it will all officially be a suburb of Atlanta.
Appreciate it. So what's going on there? Is it because of the ice, the cold, the snow?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not used to this kind of stuff. We're used to 95 degrees at Christmas time, not 2 inches of snow. And yes, 2 inches of snow, while depending where you're listening from, it's not a lot. But when you're used to wearing flip-flops year-round, and as Aaron can attest, I pretty much do.
Yep.
When you're used to wearing flip-flops year-round, 2 inches is pretty devastating. So not a whole lot of snow plows and ice road salt and winter tires and chains and all that stuff. So it's been a mess.
Sorry, 2 inches is very devastating. Scott will, Scott will not be here. If you haven't noticed, he hasn't spoken yet. But he is not going to be here. He is ill, so he won't be here this week. So in honor of Scott, we will all play Angry Birds on our phones throughout the entire episode. So feel better, buddy. We are going to have our Oscar contest, which this time I'm actually giving everybody a heads up. Because last year, apparently, I didn't give people enough notice to get entries in, blah, 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 blah. I thought a week was plenty of time. I was wrong. So the Oscar contest subject line, which if you go on the website, thehollywoodoutsider.com, you'll see a link and it'll tell you all the categories, details, what you can win, including a Blu-ray. You can be a guest on the show. There's a couple things you can win. The subject line is, I'm an Oscar ho. Yeah, I said it. I'm an Oscar ho. So fill out your selection. Send it to us by 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, March 2nd, to contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. What is so funny?
My ho has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. I don't know why that hit my head.
It sounds exactly right. And Justin is off his rocker. And for these guys, for our show, we're going to do our picks like we always do. And whoever wins is going to be able to dictate the following episode, host it, and I have to ride in the back of the bus. Except Justin can't do it in his current state.
Well, and I've never been good at Oscar predicting, so I am already confident in my defeat.
Oh, don't say that. Give it a shot.
I'm all right.
Do you guys want to see Hugh Jackman as a villain? Because he was confirmed as Blackbeard for Pan.
I think he's really great for this. I mean, the dude has fantastic hair and facial beard stuff. I mean, the dude is just...
facial beard stuff.
This is your talent search?
I mean, the guy is crazy. I mean, he's crazy. He's got that charisma. He's got that charm and that just that grit that you would, I guess, expect a character like Blackbeard to be. So I think this is fantastic. And to me, it's kind of a change of pace. I mean, he's, you know, kind of a villain. He's always the good guy. So,
well, he was kind of a villain in
Prisoners.
Prisoners. God damn. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he wasn't, you know, the antagonist of the film, but the things he went, you know, he did and thought and acted on were pretty dark stuff. So maybe villain's not as appropriate as, you know, Blackbeard, but I think he's definitely shown he has a capacity with a Wolverine film. He's got a capacity for some darkness in his character. And yeah, of course he's got that magnificent hair and, you know, grows out a nice beard. So yeah, perfect.
Apparently that's the requirements Brian would apply if he was the casting
coach. Well, his
coach.
Name is fucking Blackbeard. It's kind of in there.
it's kind of crucial to the character. Kind of.
I mean, we've seen him with the beard in the latest Wolverine film, maybe some others. So, hey, I got to respect the man's follicles.
What about Vin Diesel? He's actually teasing that.
As Blackbeard? No.
No. He's teasing that there could be another Riddick because DVD sales have been great and Universal has said that they want to develop the next one.
I mean, this is a no-brainer for me and probably for you too. Huge Riddick fans. And, you know, I'm glad that they did a film with a lower budget, a more, you know, contained, simple story, and that brought them success that Chronicles of Riddick didn't. I'm glad for that. But if they're going to just keep doing Riddick, you know, lost on a planet that happens to be covered in, you know, some sort of vicious predator, then that's just going to get old, and it's going to get old pretty quick. If they're going to keep doing Riddick films, I want them to, you know, they don't have to go full bore space opera like they did in Chronicles of Riddick, but at least get back to some of the elements that came up from that, the underverse and all that. Don't keep just him fighting Alien of the Week.
Yeah, I don't want that either. I'm totally with you on that one. I think expand, put him in different situations. It doesn't have to be stuck on a barren planet. Get him in the mix of some kind of military conflict. I think he'd be great in something like that. Just mix it up a little bit. But I would definitely
on the run in a future city or something.
Yeah, put him in charge. That worked out great the last time.
No, I said he was on the run.
Oh, on the run. Sorry.
Do y'all feel like they're doing everything they can with this character? Now, I still haven't seen the latest Riddick, so I don't want to speak about that one. But as far as the first two, because the first two were two totally, you know, we've talked about the differences between the first and second one, and obviously the studio got a little bit too much hands-on maybe in the second one. But to me, it just kind of feels like a character that is, and I've said this before, but it's being wasted. I just, because I don't latch on to him as much as you guys do. And I want to like Riddick, and I want to be just a super fan of him, but I'm just not.
I'm a super fan of the character, not necessarily the movies. The movies have been good, but like I said when Justin and I reviewed the new one a while back, I want another Riddick movie, but I want someone else directing it. I don't want David Tui. I want somebody else because I think Riddick's a great character, and I just think if he would just get away from David Tui, I think that character could really go somewhere.
Maybe Elizabeth Banks.
There you go. And speaking of Elizabeth Banks, Pitch Perfect 2 is coming, and it will be directed by Zach and Miri and Hunger Games star Elizabeth Banks. Who's excited?
You know, I really enjoyed Pitch Perfect. I think I really have yet to meet anyone who has watched the whole thing and not come away really liking it. My wife is not a musical fan in the least little bit, and she fucking enjoyed it. It's just one of those movies that seems to, you know, have been able to escape its own niche audience and reach, you know, something broader. Elizabeth Banks was a big part of that film being made. She was a producer on it. She secured the rights from the author of the book that the movie, an a cappella book. I don't quite know how you do that, but she got the rights. She produced it. She loves it. And now she wants to make her directorial debut with the second one. I think it's a perfect call.
Really? See, Scott actually loaned me the movie about a month ago and I still haven't watched it. So tell me what is so great about this movie. Cause a lot of people, everybody I know that's seen it loved it. So I'm not knocking it sincerely.
You simply put, it's the quality of the singers and the songs that they picked for them. Anna Kendrick is just adorable as all hell, and she's also a pretty good singer. You know, having her with the other girls that are part of her group, it was just a fun movie to sit back and see the way they mash up these songs and, you know, some really decent character development along the way. It really didn't drop the ball in any way. And, you know, Rebel Wilson is fantastic in it. So it's entertaining from beginning to end.
And it seems like the people that like it, they don't present it like it's a generic movie. Like, there's actually some serious, like you said, characters in it. The music is fantastic. The singing is wonderful. It just seems like that fun kind of movie. I really need to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, I listen to the soundtrack quite a bit.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I totally agree. I was really surprised with this movie because it's not necessarily my cup of tea. Saw it on cables. It was one of those where after the first, you know, so many minutes of it, I'm like, I missed the first probably 5 or 10 minutes. It's not one that you need a whole lot of backstory. So kind of took the gamble, just watched the rest of it and was very pleased with it. Watched it again from the beginning. And I probably watched it 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
It's catchy. I mean, the music is fantastic. It's, you know, the songs are very catchy. There's some holy shit moments in this. Like, I can't believe they went there type stuff. And it is just an all around, just a really good movie and just fun. And it doesn't matter if you're watching it with a 5-year-old or a 50-year-old, it is a fun movie for everybody. And I was really surprised by it, and I'm really looking forward to the second one.
Wow. I really didn't think it was a movie with sequel potential, but I will have to watch it this weekend, put it that way.
They were just, I think most of them were freshmen in college, so, you know, there's plenty of room for the next year's competition and all sorts of hijinks.
They're just going to glee it out. They'll be there for 8 years.
I hope they don't. I mean, that's the obvious kind of comparison. But, you know, because we're talking films as opposed to 20-something episode seasons, I think there's less of a chance of them, yeah, kind of gleeing it. But there's always good songs and talented people to sing them. As long as they give me a half-decent story to surround all of that with, I'm pretty good to go, and Pitch Perfect did it better than most.
All right. Well, you guys remember a couple weeks ago we talked about trailers and movie theaters, and we were saying we wish they didn't have as many. Brian loves them. He wants it to be 85 minutes long, apparently.
Yeah, I want to buy a ticket just to go watch an hour and a half full of trailers.
Well, we are trendsetters because movie theaters are petitioning to get trailers cut from the 2 minutes and 30 second standard, which is what it is now when you go see a movie, to 2 minutes maximum. And they also have a few other restrictions they want imposed, the biggest being that a movie cannot be any further out than 150 days to release.
Wow.
Yeah. That's like your Spider-Man 2s. Amazing Spider-Man 2 wouldn't be on there. Your Transformers 19, whatever, wouldn't be on there.
Yeah, I mean, I can really understand that, because how many times has a movie gotten a teaser of a teaser, and then the teaser, you know, and then the first micro little trailer, and then a longer trailer, you know, all over the series of a couple of, you know, several months. From the movie perspective, the producer's perspective, that's all marketing and building awareness of what's coming out. But, you know, for these theaters that have probably got just a glut of trailers and teasers to run, making it tighter to the actual release date doesn't make a lot of sense. But what the National Association of Theater Owners, the main part of these completely voluntary guidelines, you know, no movie company has to obey them if they don't want to. But I do think you thumb your nose at these sorts of organizations. If you do it, you better be careful, because these are the theater owners of America. And if they don't want to play your trailer, I'm pretty sure there are ways that they cannot play your trailer. So I would like to see the extra 30 seconds taken out. I think trailers are already too filled with spoilers, and anything they can do to save at least some surprise, that'd be nice, and save some time that I have to spend sitting in that theater waiting for the reason I paid a ticket.
Now, what about you, Mr. I love all these trailers?
Yeah, I do. I love the trailers. I don't necessarily want to watch a 5-minute trailer. You know, I don't want to watch 6 or 7 2.5-minute trailers. And I also don't want to spend another 10 or 15 minutes before that watching all the little 20-30 second clips for the sound system, the movie camera tech, you know, company, the be quiet, turn off your cell phones, all that stuff, all those reminders, all those little promo deals. And I mean, all that adds, you know, and I agree with most people, you know, where, you know, all of a sudden between that and 5 or 6 trailers that are coming in at 2, 2.5 minutes, you're looking at almost 20 minutes of extra fluff. And, you know, as you know, when you're talking about a movie, especially a movie that runs in that 3-hour range, anything over 2 hours, but in that 2.5-hour range, that really makes for a long day. And you know, I'm all for trimming it down. I love the idea of not being able to release it more than any further out than 150 days.
Why do you love that idea? Because that's what, a little less than 4 months.
I don't need to get hyped up about something coming out next summer.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need, you know, if I'm watching a big movie summer of 2013, I don't need to see a teaser for something coming out in 2014. You want to tease something coming out at Christmas time? Fine. That's in my vision of down the road. But I'm not going to walk out. I don't know. I don't necessarily see myself walking out of the theater going, man, did you see that little teaser for that movie coming out in a year and a half?
But then we do all talk about it. I mean, we talk about it on this show. We talk about it with friends. When we see those teasers, like Amazing Spider-Man came out not too long ago. The Transformers 4 teaser is going to come out. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
That's fine. Release them on YouTube. Release them on Deadline.com or TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Whatever.
I like that.
You know, and that's fine. But I just, it, as far as we are just so busy. We as a big community here trying to cram in so much during our day. You know, we've got workout programs that are 25 minutes long. You know, mm-hmm. We've got 4-minute abs. We've got drive-thrus for food. We've got everything. And we're trying to cram so much in our time. So I don't need 30 minutes of previews compounded on top of a 2.5-hour movie. So
that's a very good point. And Justin, you actually brought up YouTube before, didn't you? That's where you think people should go to get these teasers and whatnot.
Well, I mean, that's where I go. It's where most movie companies go to post it. They used to do it, you know, like on QuickTime's website, which Apple owns, and things like that. But YouTube is really the perfect place to put these sorts of trailers. It's where I see damn near all of them. But, you know, you guys kept talking about not everybody's got the internet or got broadband, and they all can't necessarily see these as early as we do or as often as we do. So why should they be penalized because they don't do that? And at first I was resistant to wanting to agree with that, but I do kind of get you that there are people who, for whatever reason, just don't mire themselves in moviedom the way that we do. And so when they sit down in the theater and they see that trailer, for them it may be the first time they've seen it. So yeah, I just wish they would limit either how long they are or how many they put before a movie. It's great, 2 minutes, but if you're putting in 5, all right, suddenly that's 10 minutes longer that's been added to the runtime of the movie I paid to see.
Yeah, I'm with you. Unfortunately, Brian is not. But, you know, since there is not 4, we won't do a split.
We will settle this with Mortal Kombat.
Wow.
Duels, pistols at dawn, sir.
Well, we'll find out what happens with that. I think 2 minutes is just fine for a trailer. You don't really need to be longer than that. Cram it in there. Okay, well, we talked a couple weeks ago about Tarantino's new movie, The Hateful Eight. And we talked, I don't know when it was, but we talked about it. Well, apparently it's been shelved now due to the script being leaked, and Quentin Tarantino was not happy about it. And now he is actually suing Gawker Media for posting links to download the script. Do you think Tarantino's going a little bit too far?
No, not at all. This is something that's really, really, really early in the process. I mean, he only showed the script to technically 6 people, 3 actors and their agents. One of the agents for Tim Roth, or the agent for Tim, he showed it to Tim Roth, Bruce Dern, Michael Madsen. Tim Roth's agent read in person in front of Tarantino, so he knows he didn't do it. So it's apparently he's narrowed it down to the agent of either Bruce Dern or Michael Madsen. And he's still, you know, they're still discussing on how to shoot this. They weren't even planning on filming this till at least winter of this year or even in early next year. So this is just one of those things where the ball's just getting started to roll, and now all of a sudden, you know, his trust is broken, basically. And he's hurt, and kind of rightfully so. I mean, he does explain how if, you know, at some point during the process later on during filming or something, the script gets out on the web and people search for it, you know, he's fine with that. It's flattering to him. If somebody wants to work that hard to get it, then by all means, you know, congratulations, enjoy it. But at this stage of the game, it's really, you know, there's it's such a fluid situation and everything. I think he's just hurt by it.
No, I guess I can understand that. I don't know if you scrap a whole movie because of it, though. I mean, it just seems like an extreme reaction. I don't know how many people would actually download his script and read it. And I know that, you know, the internet, the way it is, it's going to flutter. It's going to hit tons of websites. But how many outside of the hardcore fans are really going to read that?
But
those are the ones that pay $15 to go see his movie, though.
To someone like Quentin Tarantino, who is such an unabashed fan of film, and he has written just some amazing films, and a lot of what's great about his films are all the unexpected elements and the twists that he can put into them, and to have to think, you know, from his perspective, to think that now this thing that I wrote, and who knows if it's a first draft or a fifth, is now suddenly out there available to the entire world. I can understand being, you know, really unhappy with that. I think it's he can't help but take it personal. And, you know, there, as far as the lawsuit goes, he should be suing them because he owns the right to that script and he owns all the publishing rights. By them making it available to download, they have basically taken the digital distribution part of his copyright for their own, and they can't do that. So they should be sued, and he should, you know, basically be given a fucking part of the company. Because they will be up to their ears in shit if they did make it available for people. If they basically published it without his permission, they could be in a whole lot of trouble. As an artist, I hate to call myself that. I can understand. It's like if I was writing a book and I didn't want anybody to see it, but suddenly, you know, I show it to a few friends just to get their thoughts, and the next thing I know, my next book is out there for the world to read, probably without all the edits, corrections, and changes that I was going to put into it, it would really hurt. And I don't know if I would ever want to publish that book, knowing that it's out there, that I didn't do it. And, you know, it would feel awful.
By the way, for anyone wanting a copy of Stillwater, email Aaron at thehollywoodoutsider.com, and we'll have a little conversation.
You son of a bitch.
No, but I get the lawsuit. The lawsuit, that makes total sense to me. I get that. But do you think it's right that he scraps the entire movie because of it? Do you think that's...
I do, personally. I think it's his right to do it. And if I were him, I would probably do the same. But the thing is that this isn't his only idea. And I'm sure that if he does end up really, truly scrapping the whole thing, he's going to come up with something new. And people who would have worked on this movie will eventually work on whatever it is that he puts out next. You know, this isn't the end of his career. It's just one film that now he probably won't be making. I don't really ultimately think it's a huge deal in the grand scheme of things, because he'll just put out something else and I'm sure it'll be great.
Yeah, there was another project that he was kind of on the fence with anyway. He said he's been gaining a lot of interest in doing, and it's kind of, he's been a little bit more passionate about that. So he said he's probably going to jump on that one and release Hateful Eight as a book. So, which he said he was kind of on the fence with doing that anyway. He's heard about it, and it's probably a little bit more of an overreaction, maybe just really emotional. But like you said, he was talking with Harvey Weinstein about how to even shoot the movie. They haven't even really cast it or anything like that. So, which is kind of ironic, because in other news, Harvey Weinstein has basically sworn off doing violent movies, which is very, very odd.
Huh. Do you think that makes him a hypocrite, or is he just the guy following his conscience?
I think we've talked about this, you know, about a year, year and a half ago, when that bully documentary movie came out. Yeah. So I think the guy just, I think he just knows, I think it's media spin. I don't really, you know, when it comes to stuff like this, I don't believe anything he says, as I guess I just take it with a grain of salt because I just feel like it's propaganda. It's just, he's drumming up interest. He's wanting to do a movie with Meryl Streep and about the NRA. And I just think it's a way to get some buzz out there. And if we're talking about him and we're talking about his projects, then, you know, hey, that's, he's done his job. Hmm. But that's my two cents. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly wouldn't want to label him a hypocrite. For me, a hypocrite is someone who espouses one thing yet does another concurrently. Mm-hmm. If in your past you were Harvey Weinstein and you produced some pretty violent and brutal films, and then later on in your career something happens that makes you no longer want to produce those kinds of movies, then that's a change of heart. It's not hypocrisy. Now, if he went on to make the next, on a Saw movie, then sure. I mean, paint him with a hypocrite brush all you want, and you'd be entirely right to do so. But as far as, is this how he really feels, or is this a way of marketing and drumming up attention? I don't know. I'll assume the guy's on the up and up. I mean, he's going to be, Brian was saying, he wants to do a movie with Meryl Streep about the NRA. That costs some money. Sometimes people are pretty unwilling to put their wallet where their mouth is if they really don't have the feelings to back it up. But he seems to, and he really did push, for Bully quite a bit. I kind of want to take him at his word. I could be completely fooled, but that's just how I am. I always hope the best out of people.
When did that start?
Today.
Like right before the show?
Right before the show.
15, 20 minutes ago? Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to start seeing the good in people. Yep. By the time the show's over, you're going to be over that.
Yeah, probably.
He's just one of those guys where I can't trust him. You know what I mean? I mean, he's always the guy doing and saying.
You just don't like Jews.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Just admit it.
I don't like chubby Jews. I've got a problem with a guy who only seems to speak when he's trying to create a buzz around a movie or movies that are coming out. I have a hard time the guy who basically gave Tarantino a career and is fully supportive of Tarantino going forward, has this change of heart. It's hard for me to buy into what he's saying, I guess. Personal opinion.
I understand. Negative Nelly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't change a heart before the show, yeah. So I'm going to stick to my guns.
I'm open to, to him proving me wrong.
My guns that shoot people. Snow White.
In the face.
In the face. Snow White and the Huntsman director, Rupert Sanders. The guy who made out with, what's her name? He's on course to, that's what I know him as. Not as super director, as the guy that made out with the chick from Twilight. That's how I know him.
How sad is it that you nor I seem to be able to call her name to mind?
I can't remember her name. What is her name? Oh, what?
Kristen Stewart.
Kristen Sleepy Eyes Stewart. That's
Kristen,
right.
Scott Thomas.
Yes, Kristen Scott Thomas is such a much better actress. But Rupert Sanders is on course to direct a live-action version of Ghost in the Shell, the Japanese manga. Does this give you good vibes, or does this scare the crap out of you, Justin?
Well, I like it. I think that what Rupert Sanders did with Snow White and the Huntsman, which I really went into expecting the worst and came out really being impressed by what I saw, I think what he was able to do in that film with all of its special effects and CGI work bodes well for what he would want to do with Ghost in the Shell. I don't know how many people who listen are aware of Ghost in the Shell. Yes, it was originally a manga, which is a Japanese kind of a graphic novel back in 89. And then they soon after did an anime film of it with the same name. And they did a second one. And they've also got a TV show. Anime TV show for Ghost in the Shell. It is a highly regarded Japanese series. I really loved it. A lot of people think that it's directly responsible for The Matrix in a lot of its look and design, and I think the Wachowskis have even said as much. It's a really great cyberpunk story. I think that he can do it pretty well, and I think it's the type of anime that you can actually do live action without too many problems, as opposed to something like Akira, which is just so fucking weird and out there. I don't know how you would attempt it. I think he can do a good job with this. Are they going to stick with the Japanese nationality of the characters, or are they going to go more you know, broad with what they're doing.
Yeah,
they'll I'm sure they'll cast all American actors.
White people. And
make this, white folk.
White people.
You know, and not and stop this from being just a Japanese story that takes place in Japan and make it worldwide. I have no problem really with that. But I'm actually really excited. I love Ghost in the Shell, and I'd like to see what this guy can do with it.
It'll end up being Chris Hemsworth and Gary Oldman. And
you got to have a lead chick, though. I mean, that lead character is a tough woman, and you got to get the right person.
Well, his wife's not going to let him cast Kristen Stewart again. I can promise you
honey,
that.
Honey, that's what. I'm working with Stewart again.
Is that cool? Can we work this out?
No, you ain't.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. All right. The Talent, the Dapper Bandit, the Ladies' Man, the Heart Robber. No, we're not listing Aaron's nicknames, but they are the nicknames.
No, we are not.
Yes, we are.
But they are nicknames of our first movie hero, Sly Cooper. Sly Cooper is an animated movie about a raccoon who comes from a family of master thieves and has a couple of partners in crime, one of them being a hippo named Murray. He's the muscle, while Bentley, the turtle, is the brains of the group. Now, it's hitting theaters, speaking of teasers, in 2016. So
What?
Oh, so who's lining up to see this movie based on the popular Sony video games? Anybody?
I'll be honest. The only reason we put it in this format is my son loves this property. I know nothing about it. But I've heard, I checked the interwebs, and it seems to be like a big deal.
I've played the first two. I haven't played the third one yet. And I think there's either a HD upgrade of the previous games or even a new one out. I enjoy the Sly Cooper franchise. It's a cute character, and the games based on it have been fun. If I was approaching Sony and asking for my pick of their properties, I would sooner go with a Ratchet and Clank than I would Sly Cooper. And really watching the trailer, it just looked like something cutscenes from a game. So I'm not quite sure what are they going to do in a film that's going to, bring it, elevate it over the little movie segments in the game. Because frankly, that's what I feel like I'm watching.
That's kind of what I thought. But I also am not familiar with the game. So as far as the clips look fantastic. I mean, they look like it's beautiful animation, but it looks like it's probably from a video game. But I do like the idea of myself being called the Heart Bandit, so I will give money, not much, we're talking like change, for someone to call me that during my lifetime.
Well, okay. That wasn't one of the nicknames, but...
Was it? What was
I'll call you. How about Dumbass? Would that work?
That would work.
Okay. Is it kind of...
Are you sure it wasn't a Heart Bandit?
No, I'm pretty sure it was the Dapper Bandit and the Heart Robber. So
same thing,
Robber
Bandit. They both steal.
I'll just go with A-hole, but that's it's a little easier.
What was your question, jackass?
Is it? Does anybody else find it just really coincidental that a cartoon movie about a talking raccoon is going to be coming out shortly after Guardians of the Galaxy?
Well, and that's kind of what I was thinking. It's like, you've got this raccoon character and this could be in a live action film. If that works, why do Sly Cooper in the same animation style as they do in the game? Give it, a more real appearance. Don't make him just look like the character from the game. Make a real raccoon out of this character and all the rest of them. I kind of wish they would really stray from what those of us who play the games have already seen plenty of times over.
You want like a little Bentley the Ninja Turtle and Murray the Hungry Hippo and
Sly Cooper? That'd be awesome.
Okay. I don't know enough about this property, but I don't know if I want to see
it. Give me Ratchet and Clank. That's what I want.
Yeah, so just say what you mean. That's really what you mean. Give me what you want.
What you really, really want?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you want. What you really want.
Brian, go.
I want to
take control, you son of a bitch.
All right, let's just zig a zigzag up to the next one here. Yes! Point, Brian. Yes.
man, you know way too much of that song.
All right, next up from WWE Entertainment.
Woohoo!
The people who brought a cinematic gold, such as The Man with the Iron Fist and The Marine.
Oh, fuck, they did The Man with the Iron Fist? No, I don't want to see this anymore.
Comes the horror movie that looks like it might have been inspired by Snow White in some fashion called Oculus. Katie Sackhoff, which is apparently all I needed to say for some folks out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much where I was at.
Yep.
She stars as a sister who's trying to get her brother exonerated from a murder charge by proving that the crime was committed by supernatural forces. Boom, boom, boom. Anyway, opens April 11th here in a few months. So, Aaron, what'd you? Yeah, you're a kind of a horror guy. What do you think about it?
Yeah, kind of. I think it was sufficiently creepy. I was actually surprised by it. I've never heard of this movie. Didn't know anything about it. Watched the trailer, which obviously you can find on the website, and I recommend people watch it. It's a good moody trailer. It kind of establishes, you know, what the type of film they're going for, and I think it just does a wonderful job of conveying that. And it's from the Blumhouse guys, so it's the guys that did Paranormal Activity and all those, but it's not a, you know, it's not a
Blumhouse production.
Yeah, it's not a Blumhouse production, so it's not shaky cam and all that stuff. It's an actual movie, and I just think it looks very creative and original, and I like horror movies that take a chance.
And no RZA to be seen.
No RZA. If I would have known it was The Man with the Iron Fist, I should have looked that up, because that might have made me say,
I still haven't seen that.
Oh, you should waste a couple hours hating yourself and watch it.
I'm a big horror fan too. Lately, I've been on a horror jag trying to find good horror movies to watch, and it's just struck me how rare it is for someone to get the horror formula right. But this, from the trailer, this one looks like they've got a real good potential of getting that formula right. It looks creepy. I didn't see any wrestlers, so I'm assuming that this is an actual film and not just a way to get attention for Gravedigger, whoever the fuck needs the attention.
I like how you're trying to figure out who's the big wrestler right
now.
Yeah,
I'm like, who?
Is the Rock still doing this?
He's still cooking? I don't know. But it looks good. And I'm looking forward to it.
I know. Pleasantly surprised. Brian, do you want to see this one?
Yeah, I kind of do. I'm always leery of these types of horror movies because it just kind of seems like they show all the cool scenes in the trailer. So, and then by the time you go see the movie, you're like, okay, seen that one coming and that one coming and that. All right. I'm not really surprised. So, you know, my horror, I like to think a little bit more and kind of, but I just, there's some really cool imagery in it and I'm curious about it. I don't know if I'm really pumped for it though, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. It makes Brian sense. Yeah.
You're such a fucking asshole.
It's a special kind of sense.
Special kind of sense. Special. I like great ball.
Yeah, I'm a window licker. All right. Well, you can watch these trailers and those from recent episodes at thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you got anything you want to talk to us about, tweet us at @H_outsider. Go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Like us, send us messages and stuff. We like them. You can also call us at 818-81-I'm-a-ho. That's 818-814-6246. And of course, you can always email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Zig, zig. You should be a game show.
If you want to be my lover.
Please don't.
Gotta get with my friends.
You should be a game show host, Brian. Seriously. All right, let's go to the big screen where we review any new releases. And Justin and I said we'd eat our words if it didn't suck. So no. We both paid money to go see this goddamn movie.
Stupid.
I, Frankenstein. Justin, take it away. Tell us about this cinematic gold.
Well, I not only said that I would eat my words. I think something on the lines of eat my shit from a hat if this film was actually good. So when I went into the theater, I knew that ahead of me was the potential for some excrement eating. I think I can say
you don't have to be so descriptive.
Yeah, Stuart Biddy, known primarily as a film writer, he worked on 30 Days of Night, G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, those probably don't bode too well for some people. But he also wrote Collateral, which I thought was a really good film. And he's worked on, as a screenwriter, all of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. And I enjoyed this quite a bit. But, you know, this is his directorial debut. And is I, Frankenstein, the film that, you know, is going to establish a career for him or kill it right off the bat? I don't know. But he managed to get some pretty decent actors on board, not least of which being Aaron Eckhart, who plays the lead character of Adam Frankenstein. But Bill Nighy and Miranda Otto were also in it, mm-hmm. along with Yvonne Strahovski. So there's definitely some talent in front of the camera. I think there's some pretty decent talent behind it. But Aaron, what do you think? What did you think of the story, first off, of I, Frankenstein?
Well, and that's one thing you didn't really say what the story was, but Frankenstein's monster, Adam, who he is known as, basically is involved in what? He's in the middle of the war between the gargoyles?
Centuries-old war between gargoyles and demons.
Thank you. Centuries-old war between gargoyles and demons. They guard the city, so every time you see a gargoyle looking down on you, that's probably one of those people.
He got a knife. He gets stabby.
And if you have a little symbol on the knife, you can kill all the demons. And the demons look very similar to a Buffy the Vampire Slayer villain. The story itself is just basically following him and trying to find out why they want him, why the demons need him. You get a little bit more backstory in terms of his character, what he wants. He obviously doesn't want to be alone. Look, the story can be really hard to swallow. I mean, seriously, gargoyles. But I eventually got past it. I liked a lot of the little throwbacks to the original story, which I'm a big fan of the actual story, not the stuff that you've seen in crappy movies.
You mean the Mary Shelley?
Mary Shelley's actual Frankenstein. The ending went a little bit too far for me. It just kind of became a generic Underworld or Blade. That didn't work for me personally. But overall, this is the story was a textbook definition of meh to me. I didn't love it. Didn't hate it. Didn't like it.
Is there a scene with like the Wolverine or the werewolves and the vampires kind of taking a break and just kind of sitting down watching this cute little battle between gargoyles and demons? Like, well, oh, look at them. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, I mean, the struggle at the heart of this film is something that has been done so many times. Yeah, Underworld, all four of those films did the whole war between vampires and werewolves, which itself has also been done before. Every YA movie these days is about some clan of immortal. Fuck, we're going to be talking about one a little bit later, mm-hmm. In our what's coming up. But the story, it really could have been incredibly good. I think that the bare bones of what this is about, that gargoyles are warriors for God or heaven or the light, however you want to look at it, but they guard humanity from demons. That is actually, for me, a pretty decent storyline to start from. Mm-hmm. With a few tweaks made here and there, I would have made Miranda Otto's character, you know, instead of being the queen of the gargoyles, I probably would have made her an archangel of some type. But there are definitely things that could have been done. It could have been great, but it ended up just kind of being, like Aaron said, meh. I mean, it's middle of the road, nothing difficult or challenging at all kind of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I think that these kinds of movies can get into some depth and character. In this one, they really just kind of didn't. But ultimately, it's about what do these two people want with Frankenstein. And that element of the film story, I actually found kind of interesting. I didn't see it fully coming. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated it on that level.
I did, too. And I thought Eckhart was decent. I
mean, yeah, he was okay. It was a role that I think any actor these days could play. It didn't really require him. I mean, hell, it could have been
anybody.
Anybody with a decent build on them and some fighting skills.
He just walked around and basically looked like he had to poop.
Yeah, he was just constantly mad.
Yeah, just strained through the whole movie. Stravinsky?
I wish they would have made him a bigger character. And by that, I mean physically. Frankenstein's monster is a brooding beast. Mm-hmm. Aaron Eckhart is a good actor, but he's not the physical presence that I think a Frankenstein monster should have had.
And the one thing I will say about him, and the reason why I say he was decent and not good, is because he looked depressed. He didn't look brooding. you know, he didn't look like a tortured soul. He just looked like he was mopey. You know what I mean? And that,
yeah,
almost to the pouty sort of mopey. And it was fine. I mean, it worked for this type of movie. It could have been so much better. I like Stravinsky. I thought she was good. But
Strahovski,
whatever. Chuck Lady.
With a British accent this time.
Now, is she British or is she American? Because she did a great British accent.
She's Australian.
Fantastic accent then.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she did a good job then. But Bill Nighy, I really liked him. Really liked him.
I liked him, but it's basically almost the same type of character he played in the Underworld movies.
Yeah, which I like.
It's kind of the Kraken that he played in Pirates of the Caribbean 2.
Frankenstein.
Yeah, near the end of the film when, I was just like, oh, that sounds like the Kraken.
It sure did.
No, when he played Casey Jones, or David Jones.
Casey Jones.
Fuck, that's a whole different thing. No, when he played...
Davy Jones.
I kind of got a little of that in this, too. I kind of felt like he was actually the one that was mailing in the most for me.
Yeah, but he's just one of those actors where whenever he does a villain, even if it's the same guy, I like him. He chooses dialogue. He loves playing with the other characters in the room. He just does it well.
I would actually be really interested in talking with someone about this story and how it could have been made better, but... I certainly wouldn't want to do it on the show and spoil the story. It's probably not even really worth the discussion, but I hate it when a story that really could have been cool just kind of gets wasted.
And
nothing irks me more.
Yeah, and especially because, and that's where we're headed, is the production. The production itself, I thought, was beautiful.
Pretty top quality stuff.
The special effects were phenomenal for the most part, except for maybe some of the creature designs. But the gargoyles in action, I mean, the transformations from human to gargoyle, I thought were flawless. I liked the demon killings, you know, in terms of how they represented that. I thought that was really well done. It's almost like every time something came on screen, I'm like, wow, this could have been so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Just the story was the biggest. And some of the dialogue. Oh, my God. Some of the dialogue.
Oh, yeah. Well, this kind of production quality, it's almost like... someone driving a Ferrari to deliver the news, the paper. You don't need something that beautiful and high-tuned to do the mediocre shit with it that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. It looked great. For the most part, I couldn't really find any flaws. I saw it, unfortunately, in 3D, and I didn't think it added anything to the film at all. Mm-mm. To have it put in 3D. But, you know, all in all, it's a good-looking film. They definitely put some money into this thing. But overall, I think we've probably given this film a lot more time than it probably deserves. What did you think of it on the whole, and what score would you give it out of 10 bucks?
I think we probably spent more time on the movie than it's going to have in the theater. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. It's just like one of those movies where there's parts of it that are pretty interesting, but the story and the dialogue just makes the movie suffer. It's too bad, too, because it looks beautiful. If $10 is the full price of admission, this one's worth $4.50.
I'm not going to be as quite that down on it. I do think that the production is good. I think some of the performances are pretty decent. I wasn't offended by the movie. I was just more disappointed, which is odd because I really expected to hate it. So you would think by being disappointed, that means it was even worse than I thought it would be. It's just the opposite. It was better than I thought it would be, but it could have been so much better.
Well, I told you this was right in your wheelhouse. I thought for sure you'd like it to some degree because it's kind of in your wheelhouse.
I enjoyed it the first time I saw it, but I tell you, I do not have really any interest in revisiting this film. If they make a sequel, which they kind of set up at the ending of this, I would go see a sequel, but I really don't have an interest of adding this to my catalog of films. It's kind of a one and doneer. But you know, $1 out of $10, I will be incredibly kind and I will give it a 6.
Yeesh, you're being very kind. That's like 3 stars. But hey, it's your score. We also saw, and we'll be quick with these because they are a couple weeks old, but Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. Scott was going to review it, but he's busy whining around in his own bile. So, Brian, you and I did see this.
Together.
Together. We got to see a movie together. Chris Pine stars as Tom Clancy's signature hero, Jack Ryan. The movie kind of goes back to Ryan's beginning as a CIA analyst and also has Brian's hetero life mate, Kevin Costner, on board as the operative who recruits Ryan, as well as Keira Knightley pops up as his soon-to-be wife. The movie really is just about Jack Ryan going up against a Russian sumovich played by Kenneth Branagh, who also directed, and his evil plot involves destroying the U.S. dollar. So, Brian, what was your verdict on this, or what did you think, real quick, of the Jack Ryan movie?
I like the fact that it was a threat to the United States, but it wasn't necessarily sending nuclear missiles headed to the state capital or something like that. It was something that was pretty realistic, pretty almost, you know, kind of believable with the basically crushing our economy. Mm-hmm. And I was very pleased with it. There was a couple of good lines. Love Kevin Costner, so that's going to score a couple of points for me anyway. I'm going to give it a, I'm going to give it an 8.
Wow.
Yeah. I was very pleased with it. Chris Pine is pretty good. I like, you know, and the fact they bring in his, fiance, they kind of work her into it also and have to kind of explain things to her. And it's just kind of funny watching them work that out. And, because Kevin Costner is right there in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. So it was, I don't know. I was very pleased with it.
I actually feel bad for the filmmakers because I thought they did an admirable job. Chris Pine, I thought, was a good Jack Ryan. Kevin Costner, he's just good. He's riding that train right now where he's just that guy you want to see in these kind of movies, you know. Keira Knightley is the only one that I thought suffered because the first half of the movie, I didn't like her character at all. I thought she was a big giant cliche. But second half of the movie, she fit more into the movie. You know, once she kind of has an idea of some things, I think she works great. Kenneth Branagh, I loved in the movie, and which, you know, he directed it, so I'm sure he gave himself some good airtime.
Direction.
Yeah, direction, but airtime. I mean, I'm sure he beefed up his own part because he's like, hey, I got to make myself a little sexier. But as to what Brian said, I loved that they didn't blow up a major city or do anything along that lines. They actually had a clever terrorist threat, and that doesn't happen very often. I'd give it, out of $10, I'd give it 7. And you can read Scott's review on the website, which he gave it 8.50. He loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Oh, wow.
It. Yeah. And Justin...
Makes me wish I'd seen it.
You should. We were pleasantly surprised. We both walked out of there going, wow, that was a lot better than we thought it was going to be.
Cool.
Devil's Due, Justin, or Due Date, whatever you want to call it.
this film is so boring. It's one of those found footage kind of supernatural shenanigan horror films. It's Rosemary's Baby meets Paranormal Activity, and it is boring as fuck. I was so disappointed in this film. It was one of those examples of what Brian said earlier, where the trailer's got all the best parts of it, and then really all you're watching in the movie is all the crap they put in between those parts. And it just... One thing that I think makes for a very good found footage movie is that I don't recognize any of the actors. Mm-hmm. You know, in any other film, the high profile actors is fine. But in a found footage movie, which is supposed to really work because everything seems real, as soon as I see an actor that I've seen in tons of other things, it kind of breaks me out of it. And there's one actress and an actor in this film that I've seen them before, and that kind of ruins the mood. The crappy writing and the shitty story and the boring acting ruins the rest of it. It's like I said on Facebook, Devils Do is more like Devils Don't. Don't bother. Don't waste your money or your time. Ignore this because it really has nothing whatsoever to offer.
And what'd you give it?
I'd give it a 3.
Ooh.
This devil baby should have been flushed down the toilet. Then it would have climbed its satanic way back out, and then you have to poop on it.
Let's go to way too much excrement in this episode, by the way, so far. No more mentions. Let's go to box office. One of our listeners, Tammy, wanted us to point out that ride-along director Tim Story is the most successful black director in Hollywood, and no one acknowledges him. So, bam, acknowledged.
Well, didn't he do the Fantastic Four?
He did. Yeah, he
films. Did. He did a few others.
Barbershop, Think Like a Man. He's actually pretty accomplished, but he doesn't get much credit because his name is not Spike Lee and he's not.
Because everybody's racist.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, here's the top five. Ice Cube and Kevin Hart mowed down the competition as Ride Along knocked down $21.2 million en route to a $75 million total. Smell that? That's a sequel coming. It's going to happen. Lone Survivor is still alive with $12.9 million for a $93 million total, and as of today has passed Zero Dark Thirty as the most successful film based on Iraq.
America!
What'd you say, America?
God damn it, America!
The Nut Job nutted up about $12.1 million for a $40 million total. And Frozen refuses to thaw with $9.1 million in its 10th weekend for a $347 million total. And became the number one original animated film of all time, which means not a sequel, not a re-release, etc. So the first run, original, that's
your number one. Way to go, Frozen. Good movie.
Was that your applause meter? Is that what that was?
No, that was my dog shaking its head. I apologize.
Your dog's very excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Ryan has lost the war with only $9 million for a $30 million total, effectively killing any potential sequel potential.
That sucks.
I said potential twice in one sentence. And
I wonder why. Do you think that them releasing this in January fucked it?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you think if it would have been December or maybe February or March, do you think it probably would have done a lot better? Because really you would think that in this dry season, this kind of movie should be standing out. But instead, I think it's kind of getting ignored like a lot of films do in January.
I think it's a summer movie. That's what I think. Or even a Christmas movie. And they put it up against the two biggest action movies of January. Lone Survivor and Ride Along are huge hits. I think it's a timing thing. I really do.
That's a shame.
Paramount.
It is, because it really was good. Poor guys.
I mean, you would think they got smart people up in there. You would think they would figure this shit out.
Yeah. They originally had it slated for Christmas, and they backed off. They were afraid of some of the other movies coming out. I think they should have held to that, but hindsight 2020.
I don't know. There were some pretty good ones coming out at that time.
That's true. And I, Frankenstein was dead on arrival with $8.6 million. There is no amount of electricity that can save that one. It's done. Sorry.
You can't put enough eels in there.
No eels can save it.
Nope. All right, folks, we are going to be talking about three films all opening up on February 7th. The first one, The Lego Movie. Yep, another CGI cute fest. This one is about an ordinary Lego minifigure
less enthused.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me see if I can bump up my excitement. An ordinary Lego minifigure.
There you go.
Mistakenly thought to be the extraordinary... The extraordinary master builder is recruited to join a quest to stop an evil Lego tyrant from gluing the universe.
Oh my God.
Together. Bum, bum, bum. Directed by, I never heard of these people. Written by, ain't heard of them either. So really for this film, you're going to go for the vocal talent. You got Will Arnett, Elizabeth Banks that we talked about earlier, Allison Brie, Anthony Daniels. Hello, C-3PO's getting the real voice. Charlie Day, Will Ferrell, Will Forte. I mean, Morgan Freeman is Vitruvius, looks like God. A great cast of vocal characters. But is that going to be enough to save Lego, or is it just going to fall to pieces?
Wow.
Aaron, what do you think?
I think it looks cute. It's, I don't have little kids anymore, because they're not little. But
I fed them.
I fed them. They grew. They're just like plants. It's amazing. It looks
with attitude.
If I had small children, and I'm saying like under 10, this would be the perfect movie to take them to. I don't think families have had anything to take their kids to in a little bit. But the one thing I don't think it is a lot of people think these Lego movies and Lego games have that cross potential to where adults love them too. There obviously are plenty because they buy the games, but I don't see it. I don't find much interesting for me personally. So if you are an entire family or you have a family, yes, I recommend it. If you don't, I don't see a whole lot of adult appeal.
What about you, Bri?
Yeah, I got to agree. When the first time I saw the trailer, I thought it was really cute. I thought it was pretty, pretty funny. Now that I've seen it half a dozen times or so, I don't know if it really appeals a whole lot to me. So unless somebody I don't know. Unless somebody makes me go see it with them, then I'll probably pass on this one.
It seems like a one joke premise. You know what I mean? I don't know how you stretch that out and make it entertaining for 2 hours, hour and a half.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to keep shitting on kids' films because this one is definitely made for kids. I think there's probably gonna be plenty of jokes for the adults that bring them. And, you know, those who are older and know Batman and the history and some of these other known characters that they're inserting into this film, I definitely think there's going to be some fun to be had. But the Lego property itself holds no nostalgic love or value from me. I never really played with Legos. I've never played the games. I don't have an attachment. So it's already kind of half lost me. I don't think it's a bad film. You know, hey, Epic, what's going on? I think it's a fun film for kids, and I think they'll probably really enjoy it. But I will only see it if it hits, you know, HBO or something. I'm not going to pay good money to go see it. It's not Pixar level to me or Disney level.
Fair enough. This is Scott's movie of the week, by the way. He was
he likes this one. Oh, he's really excited. Of course he would.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think it's more in his wheelhouse. Now... Oh, God. Okay.
This is
Vampire
awful.
Academy.
Boo.
We talked earlier about it seems like every YA movie these days is about some clans of supernatural shenanigans. Well, here we go once again. Rose Hathaway is a damn fear. Half human, half vampire. Guardians of the Moria. Morrowey?
The Shire?
What? Yeah, the Shire from Mordor. Peaceful, mortal vampires living discreetly within our world. Her legacy is to protect them from bloodthirsty, immortal vampires, the Strigoi.
Wait. So the half vampire is trying to protect the world from the full vampire? Is that what I'm getting?
She is a damn fear. Her kind is they're meant to protect the Morrowey, who are the peaceful vampires.
Isn't that like a new person from New Zealand or something?
The Maori, maybe.
Maori. Oh.
They protect the peaceful, mortal vampires from the bloodthirsty immortal vampires.
Oh, okay.
So this is all right. Bloodsucker on bloodsucker violence.
Got it.
And this is her story. It's directed by Mark Waters. Written, the novel was written by Rochelle Mead. The screenplay by Daniel Waters. It stars a bunch of young ladies and some dudes. I've never heard of them. Sarah Hyland, Olga Karolinko. Sure, that name sounds familiar. Ooh, Olga.
James Bond, mm-hmm. Skyfall.
Or, Skyfall.
Not Skyfall.
No, not Skyfall. It was the one before that, the one nobody
before
liked.
That one. Yeah, the one nobody liked.
Quantum of Solace. She was in Hitman, and she was in your movie last year, Oblivion.
Yeah, okay. Zoe Dutch and blah, blah, blah. Brian. How much interest can you drum up for this half-assed shit?
Yeah, guy who saw all the Twilight movies in the theater.
Yes. Is this, I don't know if they sparkle, but is this one you want to see?
Fuck, the halfway through the other franchise, they stopped sparkling there too, so it doesn't
That's true.
Doesn't
they did too.
this is the one where the movie poster says they suck at school.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That should tell you everything you need to know about how good this movie's going to be. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, it's probably going to
suck.
I kind of painted myself into that corner, didn't I?
Don't want to take a bite out of this one. Is that what you're saying?
Oh God. This just, it just looks like a horrible CW show.
It does. It looks so bad. It reminds me of Once Bitten from the '80s. You remember that?
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, where it was just awful, cheesy.
You want Jim Carrey's early movies?
Yep. Before he became famous and he became Ace Ventura. Excuse me. It looks bad, unfortunately. And, you know, I feel like we've got a couple of these in a row. It's just that time of year, unfortunately. But, you know, I have no idea if the novels are any good. I'm sure they are. That's probably why they were trying to capitalize on them. So I'm not knocking anybody that's a fan of the books. I'm only talking about the trailer. It looks bad. It's a dumb title. And it just, seriously, I think it looks worse than a CW show. It just looks that cheesy. I hope I'm wrong. I would like something to add a little sparkle to the vampire genre because it is suffering right now. But
it is sucking.
It's sucking. It is Die Hard, and this is not the movie I think to save it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really torn about a movie like this and based on a book like they are, because you know, I really want kids to read, and it is so amazing how the youth market in books has just exploded. I mean, you can't walk into a brick and mortar bookstore anymore without tripping over the YA, the teen books and so on. They are everywhere. I'm so glad. I just wish that that audience would demand something more inventive, something with a bit of intelligence, a story that just doesn't seem so hackneyed. You know, cliche, fine, but make it good cliche. Don't do it bad. And to me, this just kind of encapsulates everything that I don't like about a lot of YA storylines. Part of the horror fan in me hates them because they neuter, which is such a great horror archetype, the vampire, and they turn them into, you know, little more than soap opera teens. And I wish they wouldn't just kind of soil all these great archetypes, but I understand it's a younger generation. They want to make stories their own. Just make them better. That's all.
No argument.
So when they do the film's fucking better. Buffy already did this, kind of, and it was so much fucking better. All right. Now, let's go ahead and talk about really the only film worth fucking talking about, The Monuments Men. This was written and directed by George Clooney.
Yeah!
It also stars George Clooney with Cate Blanchett, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman. A stellar cast with this film. And it takes, you know, not to lead too much into what we're going to be talking about later, but it actually takes a setting, World War II, and does something unique with it that I haven't seen in a movie before. An unlikely World War II platoon are tasked to rescue art masterpieces from Nazi thieves and return them to their owners before Hitler can destroy them all. You know, Aaron and Brian, you both are military guys. You sure you've seen plenty of military movies? Mm-hmm. Does this one, you know, blow your skirts up at all?
Oh, me, definitely. It's one of my top three most anticipated movies of the year. Clooney knows how to shoot a movie, so it's visually stimulating, as well as tell a good story. I've seen that over and over from his work, so I'm very curious to see how this turns out. The only thing that makes me a little leery is because it was scheduled for December, and they pushed it back a couple months. I don't know if that's because they weren't sure about the movie, you know, because they can, Clooney can say, well, it wasn't done yet, but you don't really know until you see the movie. So I don't know if that's something I should be nervous about or not, but it does give me a little bit of pause.
Yeah, this was one that I was really anticipating too for last year because it was, you know, supposed to come out, I guess, in December or even before that. Then mm-hmm. it seemed like it was pushed back two or three times. Anyway, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I think the cast they have is just fantastic. I mean, with, you know, like John Goodman and Bill Murray playing military guys, it's just it's kind of fascinating. So
boom shakalaka laka, boom shakalaka laka, boom shakalaka laka, boom.
So yeah, and the, like I say, it's a unique premise, especially along a subject line that has been beaten down quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
It looks interesting. It's certainly an aspect of World War II that I was aware of, but, you know, just hadn't given much thought to. And I don't know how many people, you know, out there in the movie watching audience, how aware they are of, you know, this aspect of World War II. So I'm glad that somebody has made something of it, which looks like a really good film. I want to see it, but I'm not excited to see it. So I'm kind of in a weird gray area on this film. I'm sure it will be really good, but do I want to rush out into a theater to see it? I'm not necessarily sure on that count, but given its competition, it's definitely got a leg up on the other two. So let's go ahead and get to that. Of these three films, coming out February 7th, the Lego Movie, Vampire Academy, and The Monuments Men. Which one are you most likely to head out to a theater and see, Aaron?
The Monuments Men, by far.
Brian?
I agree. Monuments Men.
I'll give it – yeah, I got to go to Monuments Men as well. Scotty, you said already picked the Lego Movie as his film. It doesn't surprise me. I think it's good for him. But I think Monuments Men is just something more interesting and stimulating in this sad season of movies.
Well, you can listen and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher Radio app. Give us a thumbs up if you do. And through our RSS feed at thehollywoodoutsider.com. There's a new episode every Thursday.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener-suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Tweet us or Facebook us the answer, and we'll give you a proper whole shout-out. Now, we weren't able to do it last week, so we actually have 2 weeks of What's This Movie to shout-out to. So for Brian's, which was 2 weeks ago, the answer was Tropic Thunder, which a lot of people got wrong, believe it or not. But those that got it right, Jacob Bahi, whichever one is one of those. I know one of those is right. Zach Parkerson, Pablo Meza, or Meza, Sean McGuire, Craig Schermerhorn, who also added that this was actually just a recording of Tom Cruise reciting his vows to Katie. I find that pretty funny. Justin's answer was Mission Impossible 3. And those that got that correct were Pablo Meza, Craig Schermerhorn, Zach Parkerson, and Sean McDonald. So there were a lot to go through, so if I miss somebody, please email me and let me know, because it's going through 2 weeks, it's a little more difficult.
Fuck your own face! Oh, man, that's so good.
And I feel bad, because there were several people that picked Mission Impossible, but it was Mission Impossible 2 or Mission Impossible...
Nope.
Yeah. So, great. Sorry, the guys. It was Mission Impossible 3. It was. He even had Philip Seymour Hoffman in the clip, so I couldn't give it to you. This week it is Scott's turn, who's not here, but he had already sent the clip, so we're going to play it anyway. So, Scotty, hope you're feeling better.
Told you what he wanted.
Told you
what you want.
Here's your clip.
What he really, really want?
No one in this country can ever pronounce my name right. It's not that hard. Nai-i-na-na-jad.
Yeah, well, at least your name isn't Michael Bolton.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that name.
There was nothing wrong with it. Until I was about 12 years old, and that no-talent ass clown became famous and started winning Grammys.
Well, why don't you just go by Mike instead of Michael?
No way. Why should I change? He's the one who sucks.
Give it away. Give it away now.
All right. That was your clip.
Give it away now.
That was your clip. Let's go to the couch. We talk about TV and home video before we get to our exciting topic. This week there really wasn't going on much on TV news. It's that time of year. There's not going to be much going on for a couple weeks, but I did see Dallas Buyers Club, which does hit home video on February 4th. You can get it on iTunes right now if you want. That's the Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto movie that just left theaters. I think they just brought it back for a limited engagement, but it will be on video by the time you listen to this. And it's Matthew McConaughey stars as Ron, and he finds out he has AIDS and he's not gay. Or so he says. But he has AIDS. They tell him he's got 30 days to live.
Everybody's got AIDS.
Wow. All right. So he basically decides, I'm not going to die. I'm going to live. You can't tell me when to die. He finds medicinal combinations that actually work and help keep him alive. But for whatever reason, the FDA, drug companies or whatever, are keeping those drugs from being sold here in the United States. So he finds a way to traffic them legally in the United States by creating this Dallas Buyers Club. Jared Leto plays his friend and confidant who helps him get this business going. Both give heart-wrenching performances without this becoming a full-blown message movie, which is what I was afraid of. McConaughey impresses the hell out of me. This guy's career is just on fire right now. And I never thought I would say it after seeing 12 Years a Slave, but I could see him winning the Oscar for this. That's how good he was. He's better than... Well, he's not better, but he and Edgy Ofor are right neck and neck. Either one of them would win it, and I wouldn't be surprised, nor would I think either one of them was lacking because of it. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I give that one a solid $7.50. And it's not like Philadelphia. It's not... It doesn't cause great sadness and horrible pain in your heart. I mean, I think it's actually, for as much as it can be, a fun movie on the topic like this. which I'll explain why that's relevant a little later. But DVD and Blu-ray. Now, Scott had this all worked out, but whatever reason, you know, he's not here. So Dallas Buyers Club comes out February 4th, which I just reviewed. Escape Plan with Sly Stallone and Arnold, where they're trying to escape a maximum security prison. I reviewed it on episode 115 and gave it 650. I think it's a fun movie. Unfortunately, nobody saw it. Free Birds. I really like that. That's probably one of the most fun animated movies I've seen in a while. I reviewed it on episode 117, and that was 750 I gave it. About Time, episode 119. Scott.
Yes, Scott, we'll see it.
Scott reviewed this movie, gave it $9. He even put on his notes, please see this movie. He wants you to see it.
We know.
He wants you on that wall. He needs you on that wall.
Now you're crossing the streams, bro.
Baggage Claim. It's a romantic comedy starring Paula Patton and Taye Diggs. Nobody saw it. Nobody cares. But it will be on video on February 4th. And Romeo and Juliet, the next remake of the Shakespeare classic, this time starring Hailee Steinfeld. And she was the young girl from True Grit and Ender's Game. Justin, I think you really wanted to see that one, right?
I did want to see it, so I'm looking forward to getting that chance. I did see this weekend, or a couple days ago, Bad Grandpa. Funny as shit.
Yeah, isn't that hilarious?
I'll call you Cinnamon. I almost lost it.
Oy.
It's really funny. It was really funny. I would give it a good solid 8 out of 10.
And Craig Schermerhorn, he wanted us, because we do flashbacks, you know, every couple weeks or whatever, he wanted to offer his own flashback, which we haven't done in a while. So a listener recommended a movie called Article 99. And that's Craig's recommendation. It's Ray Liotta and Kiefer Sutherland. They star as doctors whose devotion to healing the sick goes way above the call of duty. In a film that's considered captivating, it's compelling, and as vital and immediate as the evening news, according to the Associated Press. It's a good movie. It's one of those movies that came out, I think it was 92. It's old. It's when Kiefer was young and he had that mustache thing going on. But it's a good serious movie, and not many people saw it, so you should find it on DVD, or I think it's on Amazon Prime, and check it out. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Holy crap. With Monuments Men coming out, we have yet another jump back into World War II, because we have not had enough of those movies. Michael Bay almost killed the entire genre single-handedly. So
far wasn't that bad.
It was, Now, we all know excellent writing can change any opinion, but I want to know for you guys personally, let's talk about specific movie topics or time frames you are just done with. You're sick of going to the theater to see them. So here's the situation. You're sitting on your couch. You're in the theater. A trailer comes on, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, whatever. Later, you're rolling your eyes and vowing you're never going to watch this, whatever it is, even if it looks good, because you are just sick of whatever that topic is. I mean, it's homeless people. It's Vietnam. Political scandals. What does that for you and why?
For me, it's the top of the list are war movies. I mean, how many World War I, World War II, Vietnam, the list goes on and on up to current day military action. I'm just not interested in war movies anymore. I think I've seen some pretty good ones that broke a lot of molds. But for the most part, they all just kind of blend together in my head. And at this point, if you want me to watch a war movie, it better have some lasers and some aliens in it or an elf. Otherwise, you take such a unique aspect of the war that's never really been done before, like with Monuments Men. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, no interest. And political movies, too. Can't stand political movies.
Now, when you say political, you mean any kind of political?
Well, I guess what I mean is, and I'm going to join them together, political movies about the ins and outs of politics and all the backstabbing, or those high CEO officer level kind of corporate intrigue movies,
mm-hmm.
don't fucking do anything for me. I don't care. I really don't care. You know, now House of Cards is interesting, but it's a TV show and they're able to go into a lot more depth on these characters. But when it comes to a movie, don't give a shit.
I'll kind of take it from here because that kind of ties into mine. And that's mine is like the political stuff, the political scandals, maybe you could even kind of combine the corporate stuff too, because it's always, I don't care how charming the guy is. I don't care how much of the people's choice, whether he's a governor, whether he's a CEO, whether he's a senator, congressman, whatever, it's always, always the old white guy. he's always the guy. I mean, you know, and it's,
well, he is a villain.
I mean, let's face it. Hey, most of your giant corporations and most of your politicians are old white guys. So it's just, there's just Broken City was an example that, you know, it's just, it, you know, the whole, you just know the whole formula and there's no freshness about it. I don't know. It's just that kind of stuff. You just always know that it's him.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
So what about you, Aaron?
My Vietnam. It's not war movies in particular, because I actually like movies about the war and those guys over there. I mean, obviously in the military, Brian, you're the same way. It's just, I think that's probably just a product of serving with them. So you have, you know, it's a certain respect thing, I think. But Vietnam, it's just one of those wars that maybe it's because I hate that war so much and I know how stupid it is. And it was, sorry. It still feels like it is. It feels like it's still going on. But I think they told every possible story they could about it, you know, and that wasn't like World War II. I think World War II had so many moving parts and had so many different parties involved. It's a little different, because I think there are other avenues and stories you can tell from that war. Just same with the Civil War and the Revolutionary War. I think there's a lot of avenues. Vietnam was just two sides, and it was really straightforward.
Both of them were kind of wrong.
Yeah, and both of them wrong. And the only people that suffered were the guys that went. And I think that story's been done to death, unfortunately. And I'm not disrespecting the guys that were there. I'm disrespecting the movies, because they've been done to death. I mean, I just don't think you can do another movie about Vietnam and make it interesting to me. I really don't.
I cannot hear a Creedence Clearwater Revival song and not think of Charlie's in the trees and I'm hanging out of a helicopter.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just been done too much. Just too much. And also the Cold War. I mean, that was great when they did it, but I think they've done just about every avenue they could with the Cold War. Let's move on. Seriously, it's not fun anymore. I mean,
the Cold War is coming back. I mean, it's winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
It was a Russian who was a bad guy on the new Jack Ryan film. We're not done with you, Russia.
That's true. Fine, get new Russia in there.
We don't hate anybody as much as we hate the Russians. I don't care how good of friends we are right now.
Have you seen Putin? Do you blame us? He's an asshole. But people, here's one that I'm sure people will, oh, that's just wrong, but people dying of some horrific disease. Fuck them. I'm sick of seeing movies about them. It doesn't, I would watch that shit on Lifetime. It's very, very rare. And I realized I just talked about a movie that I thought, you know, made that subject fun, which is very hard to do. It was a fun movie, you know, up until, you know, the end. But it's pretty much
all the death and shit.
Yeah, I mean, it can be fun. His performance is it's heartbreaking and fun. And it's very hard to do. That's why I think he did such a great job. But movies where that is the focal point always, almost always isn't fair. I almost always feel like I'm spending my time watching somebody scream, I'm acting. You know what I mean? That's why I can't stand them. It's not the subject so much as every time I see one of those movies, almost every time I see one of those movies, I feel like somebody's trying to jam their acting talent down my throat.
And unless they turn into zombies.
That's okay. Then it's fine. Make it a little creative. I can deal with that. They just don't work for me very often. So keeping in line with what we just mentioned, is there anything new or fresh you think could be added to yours? The topics you mentioned, do you think anything could be added to make it fresh?
Lens flares.
Okay.
No, I don't, it's, unless you come up with maybe with some way having a really creative justice being doled out to the, you know, to the obvious political scandal person, corporate screwer over whatever. Maybe steer the story towards him to where it just all this evidence and you just realize that, you know, it's obviously him. And then you come out with some clever way of pulling the rug out from underneath your feet and realizing that it's, oh, wasn't him after all. It's actually whatever, his wife or press secretary or whatever the case is.
Some other old white guy.
Some other old white guy. Exactly. Or gal. Exactly. You know, there's a Tom Cruise movie that's been out in the last couple of years. I don't want to say it just because it is fairly recent, but they did a good job. I thought they did a fairly good job of that.
Okay.
You know, where it really feels like it's one person when it's actually somebody else.
Yeah.
Something along those lines, I think would help that tired,
ideal genre. Ideal.
There you go.
Well, Vietnam, I don't think there's anything they could do. There's nothing that I could think of. Maybe if they threw zombies and vampires and werewolves in the jungle with Charlie, I could get into that. That's really about, or Arnold shows up and there's a predator amidst. I could probably do that. I just don't care about that war. And the same with the Cold War, unless you threw aliens in there, nothing. But with dying people like Dallas Buyers Club, that just did it. You know, show me a different side of things. Show me something that isn't just a guy preparing to die, and I might be able to get into it. Because, you know, that movie showed me a different side of that conflict that I haven't seen before. You know, I see a guy that wants to live, and he has to deal with this, and he's learning more, and you learn more about the AIDS crisis and, you know, what those people went through and the drug companies. There's a whole lot of story mixed in there. So do something like that. I could probably give those movies a shot. But Vietnam, I mean, seriously, short of werewolves, I don't think it could happen.
I actually had a story I was writing a couple decades ago about werewolves in Vietnam. So people have thought of it. This person, anyway. I don't know. I mean, do what Monuments Men did. Find an aspect of the war that has never been explored. You know, you had a really good point, Aaron, in that World War II, World War I, these were wide-ranging stories. There were so many elements to it. And so much of it, I'm sure, hasn't been explored in favor of, let's just shoot some more, you know, Nazis and, you know, rally around that. Find an element that hasn't been done, and I'll see your film. You know, if you want me to watch your political scandal, you know, if you're not taken down by RoboCop, then I don't know how interested I'll be. But find a different way to deliver that story, whether it's a different setting. I don't know, but you got to add some element. If it's just secrets being tossed back and forth amongst, like Brian said, white folk, there's really not a lot they can do.
I think it was more you that said the white folk. That's all right.
He did. He said it was all the old white guys who were always the bad guys.
Well, we all
he's right, because we
hate,
suck.
You hate whitey. Yeah. We all have an exception to the rule. So what movies did you guys feel that way? You know, you have these rules for yourselves. What movies surprised you and you were blown away by that fit those molds?
I really have a handful of John Grisham movies. The first one really that came to mind, there's a couple, but the first one really that came to mind was The Firm with Tom Cruise.
Okay.
Just because I guess it really, you've got the lawyers and stuff that are, you know, it's pretty obvious they're the bad guys early, but it does a pretty good job of, for a little while there, anyway, you kind of question whether or not they're really the bad guys. And of course, the second half of the movie is just, you know, him running. Mm-hmm. But that was the first one that really kind of jumped out to me.
Is that political? I don't remember that movie.
Yeah,
I remember
kind of lump it in there with the corporate side of it.
Fair enough.
So that's about it for right now.
Philadelphia. That's one of those movies that just blew me away. I thought they addressed it fairly, honestly, and it never, even though he won the Oscar because of his acting, I don't think he was hammering the acting down my throat, and the message especially was not just jackhammered.
He wasn't strong enough to hammer.
Wow.
He was really weak.
But Antonio was strong for him. The message was there without being too blunt. And that's really what I need in those kind of movies. I need the message to be there without being too blunt. And they also, you know, they addressed it fairly. They had Denzel in there as someone who was a homophobe and, you know, in the height of the AIDS crisis, didn't know what to do. and how he performed that and seemed like a real guy who was really, who really would change his mind because of what he experienced, that worked for me. And it's really hard for that to work. Vietnam, I didn't like Apocalypse Now. I think it's not a good movie. I'm sorry. I know people love that movie. I don't like it. Full Metal Jacket, don't like it.
First half's good.
First half, great. But the second half is awful, in my opinion.
Yep.
So, that is the most bipolar movie in history.
It is. It's one of those movies, it could almost be, wow, this is a great Vietnam movie. Oh, shit, what just happened? What was that? So, I mean, Platoon is really the only one, that, the one I go to. That is a movie that I can still watch and still, I don't say enjoy because it's so harrowing. There's nothing fun about it. But in terms of the Vietnam War, it captured the experience, so.
Yeah, for me, war movies, I think they reached their pinnacle, for me personally, with Saving Private Ryan. It was such a visceral experience in the theater. I mean, the sounds of those guns going off and getting that kind of first-person perspective of those GIs running out of those boats to get on that beach and just the pounding of bullets and people hitting the ground, it was almost too much. And it did something that just no World War II movie had really ever done for me. And that was really put me in the boots of these guys and just feeling that terror. And I don't think another World War II movie will ever be just as impactful and impressive. Band of Brothers is kind of, I don't know if I should bring it up, because it's a TV show as well, or a miniseries actually, but it took, you know, the story of this one squad of guys and what was their journey through World War II, and it was just so in depth and involved and detailed and so good to watch. Mm-hmm. If someone has not seen it, who's listening now, you really need to watch it. I don't think the Pacific is as good. But even the Pacific is pretty good stuff, but definitely Band of Brothers. If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's an HBO miniseries and it's spectacular. But I mentioned House of Cards earlier, and I think that one of the reasons I really enjoyed it as much as I did is because in a lot of ways it felt like a play, you know, with Kevin Spacey's character constantly looking at the camera and either winking at us or giving us some kind of nod, and then those moments where he would talk outright and kind of narrate us through his thoughts and what he was up to. It kind of, you know, in the breaking of that fourth wall, it made a political story interesting because now he's telling us why he's doing these things, and you get that development of the character. I wish more movies of that ilk would find ways to, you know, to bring more relevance to the characters and, you know, not make them just such black and white, maybe literally cliches.
And I got to say, to your point on Saving Private Ryan, wouldn't I think we can, I think we could all agree, but Saving Private Ryan is probably the most entertaining, I'm not saying it's the best, but the most entertaining war movie ever made. I mean, that's my personal opinion. It's the rare war movie.
And it's got Vin Diesel, come on.
Yeah, back before he was Vin Diesel.
That's right.
It's just one of those movies where I can watch that over and over and over. And it never feels like it's hammering anything down my throat. It's just telling a story. That's it.
And that's what Spielberg is good at. I mean, yeah, he can get good and campy, or maybe not campy is the right word, but with his Indiana Jones kind of stuff, he can get pretty heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. But with this one, he was very deft. I mean, it could have so easily fallen into jingoism, but it never felt like it did.
Right. Well, no, we know the worst now, so let's end on an upbeat note. What is the topic or backdrop you are most a sucker for? Like anytime it comes up as part of a movie and you realize I'm a sucker, I'm going to be in the theater ASAP. I know it.
You know me. I am a complete and total whore for science fiction and fantasy.
Yep.
It is my bread and butter. It is everything I love. It's the kinds of stories that I love and that I want to write. And I want to see how other people are creating unique cinematic experiences in those genres. And for me, the larger the scope, the more I want to see it. I mean, Chronicles of Riddick, people hated it, but I loved it. It was, you know, space opera, Star Wars, space opera. You know, those sorts of films or TV show, the Battlestar Galactica, a space opera. I eat that shit up with a spoon. Lord of the Rings the same way with, you know, Game of Thrones. It's what I grew up loving, and I will probably till the day I die.
Anything with comic books, especially nowadays, now that the bar has been set fairly high, I think anything that takes on some of the comic book characters that I love, luckily, in the next 5 to 10 years, there's quite a bit of them coming out, so I'm pretty set for a while. But unlike a lot of people, I'm not tired of zombies yet.
Really?
I'm
with you, Brian. I am not either.
I'd love a good zombie movie, and good is a very broad term. I mean, I like the 28 Days Later style, but I also like the World War Z and the Dawn of the Dead, and even maybe some of these smaller independent ones that kind of blurs the line blurs the definition of the term zombie. But I just love them. I love everything about them. And you make what looks like a halfway decent zombie movie, and I can guarantee you my butt's in the seat.
Need to watch that Contaminated or whatever. What was the title on that one?
Yeah, it was
Contaminator.
It was that indie film that I reviewed.
I think it was Contaminated or yeah, something like that.
Started with a C, but it was
started with a
C.
All right, shit. Hold on, I gotta look it up.
Well, while he's doing
let me start scrolling down IMDb movie titles that start with C.
My picks. You look for that in a minute. My picks. OK Corral. I am a sucker for the OK Corral or any Western that takes place in some small town with a lone gunslinger. You know, the doors are closing behind him as he walks in a bar. Those kind of movies I am a huge sucker for. It reminds me of my grandpa every time. Any movie that people describe as Hitchcockian, you know, if somebody's talking about, oh, that movie's Hitchcockian, they rarely ever deserve that title. But once I hear it, I'm like that dog in Up. I'm like, huh? What?
Squirrel.
Legal thrillers. I love legal thrillers. Political, legal, whatever they are, courtroom dramas of any kind. Criminal or civil, and I am there. I all I got to do is hear it's coming out, I will be there opening weekend, because there's so few of them anymore. You know, they used to be, you know, like you're talking about The Firm, they used to make movies like that all the time, and now
what was the John Travolta, a civil action or
civil
something?
Action, which I didn't even really think was that good, but I still went and saw it on opening weekend because I just love those kinds of movies. Anything with the law, for whatever
reason.
What was
the one with Matthew McConaughey?
Oh, Time to Kill.
Yes. Oh, God, yep. That was good.
Yeah,
that
another was good. Another John Grisham.
Yep.
Oh, and of course, you know, you can't talk legal movies without talking about A Few Good Men.
Oh.
God damn, is that good.
That's great. That's one of the few. I've watched that so many times. I can't even remember. I kind of lost track how many.
Thank you for playing Should We or Should We Not Follow the Advice of the Galactically Stupid.
Wow. You even did the moving shit around.
Yeah.
Effect. I like that.
The rage flip.
Yep. The rage
and
flip.
And it was contracted.
Contracted. Definitely.
Really good. You should check it out, Bri.
Definitely a C word.
I'll look it up.
Let's talk about
it's on Netflix?
Yeah.
Sure. It's on iTunes.
One of those.
I don't know if Netflix has it yet.
Gotcha.
Let's talk about what some of our listeners thought. Sean McGuire, he said, I'd be okay if the vampire movie stopped. We can take a pause on the whole thing for a while. I'm kind of with him. I would like a break from vampires.
Yeah, he's got my vote.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's another Blade movie, then fuck you. Yes.
Okay, Blade gets an exception. I'm with you. Greg Swiger, the spoof movie. Yes, kill it. He said it hasn't been good since Leslie Nielsen and an Airplane. Calm down.
I gotta say, I saw the trailer for that Scary House or Haunted House 2 or whatever it's called. The Marlon Wayans.
Yeah.
I laughed my ass off.
I will say, I did see that first movie. It's on Netflix.
And you were fucking high, so, you know.
Still, it's actually funny. I was like, oh my God, I actually want to see this. Because it seems less of a spoof where they're constantly referencing other films. Mm-hmm. But and actually, they're just trying to make a funny horror movie and not hang it on, okay, this is a Rosemary Baby scene and this is a whatever. It looks just funny, and I'm shocked that I felt that way.
The first movie actually wasn't that bad. It's on Netflix. Everybody should check it out.
No, yeah, I'll have to check that out then.
He said even the common denominator audiences have got to be realizing by now that they are being ripped off by going to the latest effort from the people that brought you Scary Movie, etc. You would think, but they don't seem to be. Dave McGrath, time frame, the 80s, because no matter how good the movie is, I can't help but be reminded how dorky my clothes and hair looked at that time.
And see, I actually like these 80s movies because for a long time, it seemed like they wanted to do 70s movies, you know, the whole Dazed and Confused thing. But when they started doing 80s shit, I was like, all right, now this is more my decade. Now let's see what they're going to do. I actually kind of like that.
Oh, you're sad.
I know.
He said, of course, now that my hair is gone, he'd probably give his left testicle for a mullet. That's pretty funny. Subject, exorcism movies. I have no interest in them anymore. Stick a fork in their ass and flip them over. They're done. I agree. Justin is going to probably hate you, but
I'm a sucker for them. Even these terrible ones. I'm a sucker for a good possession movie.
Yeah, same here. They freak
me out.
I'm
not proud.
I've never liked them. Never liked them. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm not afraid of the Lord.
Yeah,
because
you have. Evil Dead's a possession movie.
Oh, that's more demon.
It's possession.
Sure.
These kids are being possessed.
Sure, I guess.
It
Fine.
Ain't The Exorcist, but come on.
That's what I'm thinking when I'm thinking possessed. I'm thinking a priest come in, a little girl diddling herself with a cross. That's what I'm thinking.
You always go to that one thing. What is it?
That's what I remember the most from that movie. Isn't that what you... What do you remember the most from The Exorcist? You remember the spider walk?
I remember her head spinning around her fucking shoulders and spitting up pea soup.
Well, I remember her diddling herself going, fuck me, fuck me, fuck me. Whatever that was.
Jesus, fuck you.
Yeah. Ooh.
If you're going to do it, at least say what she said.
Well, I'm not saying that. Douglas Clayton, I'm really sick of seeing New York City get destroyed. Does that count? Absolutely. Also, not Hang on. Also, not a big fan of most horror movies. I don't see money, but they all look the same and sound the same. But what were you going to say about New York City?
Yeah, I like that. Let's destroy L.A., Chicago, Dallas. I mean, aren't there other metropolises?
Yeah, Omaha, Nebraska.
Maybe not that one.
Let's blow up cities with 400,000 people.
Well, Detroit's already half destroyed.
Let's just go ahead and call it a total loss, wipe it out, and start fresh.
There are a lot of stories, a lot of cities that need to get blowed up. I think New York has just about had it.
Justin Vaughn, last one. Can I say I wish someone would stop bankrolling the asylum so they would be forced to stop making movies? Touche. That's a low-budget little rip-off store.
Ugh.
That always makes movies right after the big ones, you know, Transforkers or something.
Like The Hobbits or The Halflings or something.
Yep, exactly.
Oh, God dang, but it is so funny scrolling through Netflix, and I don't know if they make all of these, but there are so many of those. And it's bad when, like, in the description, the synopsis, it says not to be confused with the mega hit Twilight, but, you know, vampire love story, you know, or something like crazy like that. It's
Vampires in Woods.
I've seen one like a knockoff of Cowboys and Aliens, and it's like the same style movie poster.
Over and over.
Oh, it is so funny. Okay. I almost want to watch them, but I don't.
And before we get to emails, it's time for Whole Corner. Now that's where, since these guys get sick of me picking everything, this is where each week one of our hosts gets to vent about whatever topic is getting their feathers in a ruffle. So Justin, this week it's your turn.
You know, we earlier reviewed movies. The topic of reviews and reviewers has always been something that I've thought about because so many people seem so dependent on what certain reviewers think. And so I want to ask you guys, you know, how much do you really care about the reviews others have of films? Are there particular reviewers that you always seem to agree with? Or do you like to be a little more independent? And I am aware that we have reviewed films. We do it all the time. So I'm lumping myself in with the reviewers.
Me personally, absolutely. Now, I don't go with Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes and all that crap because I think it's an unfair skewing of the numbers, or just skewering. I can never get that one right. But it's an unfair sampling of the numbers because, especially
skewing.
Rotten.
Skewing.
Thank you. I said that the first time, so I didn't know.
No, you said skewering.
That's what you do to a kebab. 45 seconds to get through it.
Anyway, I think it's an unfair sampling. You take a movie that it was rated average or a little bit below average, that gives it a rotten rating, so to speak, because of how they do their system. So if they've got something that, say, is 2.5 stars, it gets a rotten. I don't think that's necessarily rotten. You know, it can be just an average movie. You know, there are, it's okay to have a movie that's just average. So there's definitely some critics that I follow and I respect a lot more than other ones. Not many. I did like Roger Ebert until like the last year or two of his existence, because he was getting a little loopy with his reviews there at the end. But I am a big fan of Capone. Ain't It Cool News. I actually respect his opinions. He's probably the one I would agree the most with that's in the online community. Not many in the newspaper world, but there are definitely some that I respect. Obviously, you guys. You know, I kind of know what your tastes. No, I know what your tastes are. So if it's a movie that I think is in line with one of your tastes, I'll ask you what you guys think if you saw it, because then I'll have an idea of, all right, I could probably get into that. Or I don't know if I'd like that. And my kids, honestly, because they like the exact same things I do. So they see something before me, I trust their opinion more than anybody's.
You raise them well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, raise them to be me. Yeah.
Cool.
What about you, Brian?
No, I really don't pay attention to anybody. I kind of just, you know, I just kind of go off the trailers. You know, if it's something I want to see, then it's something I want to see. I don't like reading reviews on stuff because I don't want to get any, especially before I go see it, because I don't want to have my experience skewed by somebody else, positive or negative. You know, I don't want to go in with high expectations. I don't want to go in with low expectations unless I'm setting those expectations myself. I don't spend a whole lot of time scouring the internet for the buzz for a certain, you know, how good this movie's looks like it might be, or how well it's doing, or whatever the case is. It's just not my thing. I think it waters down the movie viewing experience. Now, I do go off of you, both of you guys, and even Scott's opinions. I do respect them. And you know, I mean, I'll hit you up. You're like, hey, I know you've seen this. What do you think? And like you said, I think for the most part, we pretty much know each other's tastes. And, you know, and so if you say, hey, I think you would enjoy it, then I'm definitely going to give it a good shot. But if you're like, hey, I don't know if you... If you say something along the lines of "check out a matinee," I'm probably going to, you know, do that or wait for cable. But I just I don't care about Rotten Tomato scores or any of these other things. I think there's too many people out there that can manipulate it, and I think there's a whole lot of people that do that type of stuff.
I agree with that.
So I can agree with you there.
What about you, Justin? Do you put stock in it?
Well, I'm more in Brian's camp. When I was younger, I used to say that I hated reviews because I wasn't going to allow other people to get in my head and try and tell me what I should or shouldn't like. And of course, that's the arrogance of youth to try and be as high-minded or, you know, have my nose up in the air. But the real fact of the matter is that I'm like Brian, I know myself. I know what I like. And so 9 times out of 10, I know from the trailers and maybe bits of news that I've read whether or not I want to see a movie. It doesn't matter how many reviewers say that it's great or how many say that it sucks. If I want to see it, I want to see it. I don't read reviews and I don't try and garner the mass opinion to know whether or not I want to see something. Now, on those rare occasions where I'm on the fence, then I may go to Rotten Tomatoes and check out, you know, what's the overall rating, and then maybe what's the top critic rating, just to kind of get something to maybe push me one way or the other. God, now I've got a Blondie song going through my head.
One way or another. Yeah.
Reviews are just, they're all personal opinions, and there's no one reviewer that I've ever agreed with more often than I've disagreed with, and different reviewers will hit me up in different, I think will like something that I liked because I liked it, and they seem to have liked it in the past that they didn't like it. But and I hate reviewers that try to give an opposite public opinion review of a movie because I feel like they're doing it for no reason other than the attention it's going to get them.
Absolutely.
For example, a movie like Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
You go to Rotten Tomatoes and it is probably going to have about a 99% rating because most people are going to like that movie because it's well made, well acted, and Pixar rarely puts out shit when their heart is really into it. Mm-hmm. But you'll always find that one fucking reviewer who has to be the naysayer, who's got to say something that's going to give him the soul. Rotten review or one of the few. And I think to myself, do you really feel that way? Or are you doing this strictly because you want people to read your review to find out how you could have not liked it? And it's retarded.
Hipster mentality.
Yep. Being negative for negative's sake. Or you know, it's much rarer, but maybe being more positive than others. I tend to fall on a more positive vibe. So, you know, that is my cross to bear.
Oh, yeah, well, you just started that, like, right before the show. So, I mean, right. That's new.
Right. Yeah. I am positive man.
I am positive you are totally wrong.
Yeah. So, right, there you go. I mean, I don't want to undercut myself with the reviews that I've written. I certainly don't mean to tell people that they should disregard my reviews or anyone else's reviews. If you like them and you seek them out, then it's all for you. You do that. I'm 41. I know what the fuck I like.
Well, but here's something I'll add to that real quick before we go on to email. I think a lot of it comes from people that you respect. And I think a lot of people that listen to our reviews on here and go by our opinion, you know, they very much know what we like and don't like by listening to the show. So they respect whoever it is that they're a fan of or they follow or they respect their opinion. That's who they listen for their review. Like Justin or Brian or Scott or even me on occasion, I'm sure. But they hear
I doubt it.
The person they know that likes the kind of films that they like, the same kind of way that they like them, and that will steer them. All right, I wasn't interested in that before, but now so-and-so, Justin said this, so I'll have to check it out. Brian liked it, and he's a manly man, so I'll check it out because that's just like me. Or, you know, Scott liked it, and I dig musicals, so I'll check that out because that's like me. You know, whoever it is that you can get behind, that's whose reviews you're going to stick behind. And that makes sense to me. I don't fault anybody for that. And we encourage it because that's kind of why we do the show. So let's go to email. And if anybody's got a thought on that, I'd love to hear people's thoughts on that. Critics and reviewers and hipster reviewers and all that crap. Feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Let's go to email Justin. Well, we'll try to make it quick. We've got quite a few. And we thank you for your emails. We've got 2 weeks worth. So let's go.
All right. The first one up is from Bree. She says, hey, guys. Number one. Yes, Aaron, I would also listen to a 4-hour show. I had withdrawal during the holidays. The DTs were insane.
That's pretty nice.
Number two, I love hearing Justin cuss. I want to hear him quote Brian's clip with all the F-bombs. He's fucking hilarious.
Which one was that?
It was the one with the fuck your face. Other word was an F-bomb. He's fucking hilarious for real. I would speak to him in public. That's how much I like him. Oh, thank you, Bree. I would deign to speak with you as well.
I'd like to see how we keep your head contained inside this podcast.
So, fuck yeah.
There's not enough bandwidth, trust me.
Number three, Brian. The flamingos are only trailer park worthy if you went to an opposing trailer park and stole their flamingos. If that indeed happened, you may remain in the TP. If not, you're off to the burbs, my friend. Number four, Scott, I'm not leaving you out.
I love that that's all she said was Scott, I'm not leaving you out.
Yeah, that was his mention. Basically, I love you guys. A great guy told me about your show, and it gets me through my Thursday mornings. I pimped you guys to a friend of mine. He sent me this, and when it popped up on my screen, it just read, subject, ho. I was almost offended. Smiley face. I listened to the most recent podcast on the way home yesterday. It was pretty good. One of the better podcasts I've listened to in a while. Like, they legitimately got me a little excited for the new Star Wars movies. You should be. And here's where she goes downhill. Scotty's TV show has my vote. I love Jimmy and Justin together and have thought the same thing forever. I also have to vote for Justin's Unearthed. Y'all know why. Shut up. You really should have put mine first. Because then I would have gotten the vote. But
Scott got the vote.
I just think it's hilarious that Justin is an honorable mention.
Yeah.
The irony.
Yeah. Well, she ends it X's and O's, Bree. Well, Bree, back at you.
That's very nice. Thank you, Brian.
All right. This one is from one of our favorite people, Sue. She says, boys, it's been a while.
Sing it, Justin.
It's been a while. So I figured it was time to pop in and say, hey, and give you a thought I recently had on who could fill Jack Nicholson's shoes as Jack Torrance. All right, now keep an open mind. She says, Simon Pegg, but only Simon Pegg as a more twisted version of Gary King from The World's End.
Hmm.
Trust me, watch it again. You'll see it, I swear. There are moments when Pegg is not leaping over hedgerows and being otherwise awesome and goofy, when Pegg shows a really dark and insane side.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. Yeah, now I think about it.
Yeah. He could pull it off. Maybe, dare I say it, even do better.
Yeah. I'm not even a fan of that movie.
That was probably written after
one step too far.
Yeah, the fourth beer before breakfast. Also, I've been wrestling with a serious ethical dilemma related to your podcast. No, not would it be that wrong to stalk and capture Brian? It's never wrong. I did the research. It happens to be wrong in the United States, but it is perfectly legal and even encouraged in some Eastern Bloc nations. I guess I better not move Eastern Europe. I often have to listen to an episode in broken up periods of time. So I shut down a Stitcher app and bring it back up hours or days later. Is it wrong to give the thumbs up every time I bring the app back up, or should I just give one per episode? It's been keeping me up nights, pacing, worrying, drinking, thinking, so get back to me on that, would you? Sue, I don't think it's wrong at all. I highly encourage it.
No, thumb up right now, and then when you come back later, thumb up again, and then later, thumb up again.
Listen to a segment, back out. Start it up again, thumb up.
Yep.
Repeat.
No ethical quandaries here. We're all good.
We are horse.
I've got a couple. I'm going to read a couple that Scott was going to do, but he's in bed. D.A. Chaney caught the new episode. Great times as always. I would watch Justin McCumber's TV show. It reminded me of Lost and the SGU show. Well, of course
Stargate
it did.
Universe.
Of course it did. It's Justin, for Christ's sake.
Southern Gainesville University?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, everything's Georgia when we're talking to Brian. Sean McGuire, have any of you read the books written to advance the story after the original Star Wars movies? If the upcoming movies follow them, then Justin and Scott have very valid points that you would want the original actors to pass the flame in the movies. And does it really matter who plays Chewbacca?
I'm a big fan of the books, or at least I used to be for a while. I remember back, and I think it was 91, maybe early 92, when Timothy Zahn had his trilogy published for Star Wars. It was like the first new Star Wars stories in forever, and they were a follow-up to the movies. There's no way they can do those books now because far too much time has passed for the original characters. But there are definitely aspects of those movies that could be brought in. And if they actually do bring in Grand Admiral Thrawn, I might just shit a brick in the theater. Damn, more shit.
Are you guys doing an Oscar prediction contest this year? Yes. The subject is I'm an Oscar ho. Go to HollywoodOutsider.com. There's more information up there. I won second last year. Congratulations. But this time I'm out for blood. Jesus. This is from Greg Swiger. That best actor is going to be a tough call, though. Hey, good luck, man. Hopefully you will apparently kill someone.
That was from
Shit, this ain't Hunger Games, bitch.
You thought that was from what?
Chisandra.
No, that's the next one.
Because Greg's under that.
Chisandra. I just screwed up the format. Don't listen to Justin.
Silly us. Trusting you.
God. Going by your, your
shut up.
Format, my bad.
Shut up. Yeah. There's people that want to stop listening.
The one that you sent out.
Chilsandra.
No, apparently not. They just want to see us ramble for 4 or 5 hours.
Chilsandra says, by the way, awesome episode this week.
Me and Justin will take over from here.
Not even done listening, but I know it is fab as always. Hope you had a great vacay. Yes, absolutely.
Vacay.
Justin. Jesus, I'm going to punch you in the face.
Good times.
Hey, good times. Justin.
Yeah, we got one from Brian, not our Brian, but a different Brian. Number one, Craig Schermerhorn. I forget what is that in reference to.
That's his name, actually.
That's his, it's in reference to the.
Oh shit! Okay, I said Brian, and it's.
So this time you're the dumbass. Yeah, enjoy. Okay.
It's in reference to the thing that he goes by.
Start that over.
No, fuck you.
Oh no, oh, no. I'm starting it over, and you can either edit this bullshit out and have a terrible sounding episode.
Yep.
Or you'll make an edit. All right, yep. What you gotta do?
Nope.
This maybe. Next one is from Greg Schermerhorn.
Craig.
Oh god damn it! Now my dyslexia is kicking in. Yes, Craig Schermerhorn. He says, listening to the show and thinking of iconic characters that no one else could or should play, so this may get covered, but Stallone is Rocky. Anyone else could have played it well from the start, but couldn't play it now. Also, I think if they ever remade Star Wars or Raiders, Nathan Fillion could do Han Solo or Indiana Jones justice. We'll talk about that in a minute. Number three, hey, the other one didn't get mentioned for best shows based on real events, King's Speech. Worthy addition. Nathan Fillion already kind of did Han Solo, and he did it in Firefly. Mm-hmm. I could see him as an Indiana Jones, though.
I could. I don't want to, but I could.
No.
But you could.
I could. Yeah, I would rather they call it something else, like, I don't know, Iowa Pete or something. Just leave Indiana Jones alone.
Johnny Idaho.
Johnny Idaho. I like it. Or North Dakota. There you go. Now he's got a first name and a last name. I don't want it. I don't want it.
But the dog is named John.
Exactly. Brian?
All right. This is from Sean March. It says, you were talking about people coming in late to the cinema and how it annoyed you. Just been to see The Wolf of Wall Street, which is excellent, but the trailers were 30 minutes long. Then the film was 3 hours long, and I got there 10 minutes before, meaning I was parked on that chair for 3 hours and 40 minutes, which is longer than some international flights.
Jesus. That's a long time.
It's not helped by the fact that they now mix up the adverts and trailers, so you can't even wander in 20 minutes late and just catch the trailers. Mm-hmm. I don't appreciate spending more than £10 to sit for 40 minutes watching adverts before the film. It's something else that needs sorting alongside phones being used during screenings.
See, Brian? He's from across the pond, and he's trying to tell you too many trailers.
We're all in agreement.
I thought we were all in agreement on that.
No, you said like last week or the week before, you would sit there for 16 hours and watch trailers.
Well, I do like trailers.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, not saying that they're that they don't spend too much time in front of the movies, but I do like trailers. There is something about seeing something for the first time whenever you're sitting down for a movie that you get all excited and giddy about it. So
what I think they should do, Sean, and I seriously believe this, is they should block it based on how long the movie is. If it's up to 2 hours, then maybe 10 to 15 minutes of trailers. If it's 2.5 hours, maybe 7 to 10 minutes, you know, and just base the trailers on how long the film is, just because that is a long freaking experience. I feel bad for you. Robert Davenport pulled the plug myself. He's talking about Scott's rant on cable. Pulled the plug myself a few weeks ago, and I don't mind it at all. Though I don't.
No, he's talking about his brain dead wife.
What?
Pull the plug. Oh, forget it.
Oh man! In light of recent events well, that went on, that's kind of
too soon.
Wow!
Sorry, everybody. Satan will not be joining us next week.
Sorry, Robert. I hope your wife doesn't listen to this because Justin just offended her. Pulled the plug.
Killed her.
Pulled the plug myself a few weeks ago, and I don't mind it at all. Though I don't bother with iTunes for anything, though. I just work with Xbox, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, and Vudu. Vudu. V-U-D-U, not the actual, you know, cult sensation. My wife has been begging me.
You didn't spell cast up a show? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yep. My wife has been begging me to do it for a long time, and finally I relented. shut up. That's what she said.
I'm such a child.
I don't miss it at all, though I miss having clocks in the rooms I spend time in. You guys neglected one of the best bar scenes ever done, by the way. The Other Guys. Totally forgot that one when we were talking about.
Something against that movie. I no.
The only thing good about that movie was the Rock and Sam Jackson.
Oh, the bar scene was good. He's right. The bar scene was good because it was a clever twist on what we've seen 100 times. So I get that. I get where you're coming from, man. You tell them to shut up. He was talking about killing your wife.
I like
a minute
the
bar
scene from The Heat better, but everybody's got their taste.
That's true.
It's all good.
Marcus Shelton, Taco Bell commercial. You are all right. There are two versions to that commercial. That's what he says.
That's whole history, baby.
We're all right.
We're all right.
We're all right. All right, all right, all right.
Shut up.
And Tammy sent us a video, and she wanted to know if we watched it. It's kind of long. It was like 30 minutes long. I did finally get to watch it, Tammy, and it was basically, what's that kid's name who plays King Joffrey in Game of Thrones?
Okay. I don't remember his name, but he's fucking evil.
Yeah, he's evil, but he just does this long spiel on a lot of things, and it's excellent. Thanks for sending the link. You can go to our Twitter
about
page.
A lot of things. Could you be a little more fucking specific?
It was a half an hour. Fuck no.
Well, I mean, is he talking about current events?
No, he's talking about acting. Physics, he's talking about acting and
shrinking Antarctic ice cap.
He's
what?
Talking about acting and the differences in how just the different portions of acting, what acting entails, and
so it's actors whining. All right.
No, it's very, very interesting. Anyway, thanks, Tammy. I appreciate it. Go to our Twitter page and the at stuff, and if you want to find the link. How to find it, stay through the credits for outtakes, go to the, although the show is already fucking long for you, I'm sure, but we had 2 weeks of stuff to catch up on. TheHollywoodOutsider.com's website, that's TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Isn't it funny how we lose one person and the show's longer? I'm just saying. Twitter at @H_Outsider, Facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Leave us a message or text us at 818-814-6426. Email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, and you can listen and subscribe for free on iTunes, listen on your Stitcher Radio app, or through our RSS feed. Thank you to Justin and Brian for being here.
Give us a thumbs up every time.
Mm-hmm. Every single time. Scotty, feel better. We hope you heal.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Get better, Scotty.
Feel better, man.
Yeah, hurry up. Hurry up, feel better.
And remember, the next time you go to a theater,
can't wait.
Buy popcorn.
Count in the seconds.
Chew bears.
Bye. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Bye, guys.
And scene.
He used to, when we were playing.
What?
Check. What? Check, Mike. 1, 2, 1, 2.
Who's gonna be the first one to say thrift shop? Who's gonna do it?
I always walk into the club like I got a big cock.
You haven't walked in a club since 1989.
That's all right, Brian. We'll have our laugh, and you know, come August when people are literally dying from the heat,
mm-hmm.
you know, up in New York or. One of those northern states that we're down here like, shit, that's just what we call Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's what I call 6 o'clock in the morning. Shut the fuck up. Highway 285, there was somebody giving birth because they were stuck in traffic.
Mm-hmm. I saw a story about that.
Is the baby okay?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So it's safe to make fun of her then. Good.
I know you guys are not real baseball fans, but you do know who Chipper Jones is, right? You've heard the name, at least.
I have not.
No.
All right. Well,
is he a golfer?
You trying to replace one of us, motherfucker?
Nobody.
You taking here. Auditions?
Nobody that's here. Just kidding. He's taking auditions. But I do want to say, did you guys see the Vin Diesel video that he did talking about the Riddick sales and stuff?
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
The gayest thing I've ever seen a grown man do. He's sitting there.
The gay porn that you've been watching.
I'm
seriously doubting that you haven't seen something more gay.
It was. It's
really? Says the guy with a gay daughter.
Hey, well, that's all right. That's how
I don't know. Maybe your version of the helicopter is different than my version of the helicopter. But my version of the helicopter requires no pants.
All right, you guys ready?
We've got no Scott tonight. What?
Poor Scott. He's probably sitting there as he's laying in his deathbed, going, "I know they're making fun of me right now."
We'll have to wait till tomorrow to hear it.
Yeah.
how he knows we love him.
Oh, really? Is that what you call a segue? Is that what that is, Brian?
Yeah. Is that what a segue is?
That's a good impersonation.
Fuck off. That's my impression of you. Okay.
This is the Hollywood Outsider.
You're Dick Muffin.
Dick Muffin?
Dick Muffin.
That
Dick
sounds Muffin. Awful. This!
We're doing a spoiler-free review of I, Frankenstein, as well as, what is it, Devil Do and Jack Ryan Shadow Recruits.
Devil's Do.
Is it Devil's Do? I thought it was Due Date for the longest time. I don't know
Devil's
why.
Devil's Do, and Scott's not here, so we're not doing...
No, we are. Brian and I are going to we're gonna do it quick, because we saw it too.
We're going to do it quick.